Chapter 8. Their comfortable nests. This new snow meant hard going. The sled runners would not slide over it so well, while one of the men must go in advance of the dogs and pack it down with snowshoes so that they should not wallow. Quite different was it from the ordinary snow known to those of the Southland. It was hard and fine and dry. It was more like sugar. Kick it, and it flew with a hissing noise like sand. There was no cohesion among the particles, and it could not be molded into snowballs. It was not composed of flakes, but of crystals, tiny geometrical frost crystals. In truth, it was not snow, but frost. The weather was warm, as well, barely 20 below zero, and the two men, with raised ear flaps and dangling mittens, sweated as they toiled. They failed to make 40 miles at night, and when they passed that camp next day, daylight paused only long enough to get the mail and additional grub. On the afternoon of the following day, they camped at the mouth of the Klondike River. Not a soul had they encountered since 40 mile, and they had made their own trail. As yet, that winter, no one had traveled the river south of 40 mile, and, for that matter, the whole winter through they might be the only ones to travel it. And that day the Yukon was a lonely land. Between the Klondike River and Saltwater at Dia intervened 600 miles of snow-covered wilderness, and in all that distance there were but two places where daylight might look forward to meeting men. Both were isolated trading posts, 60 Mile and Fort Selkirk. In the summertime Indians might be met with at the mouths of the Stewart and White Rivers, at the Big and Little Salmons, and on Lake LaBarge. But in the winter, as he well knew, they would be on the trail of the moose herds, following them back into the mountains. That night, camped at the mouth of the Klondike, daylight did not turn in when the evening's work was done. Had a white man been present, daylight would have remarked that he felt his hunch working. As it was, he tied on his snowshoes, left the dogs curled in the snow, and comma breathing heavily under his rabbit skins, and climbed up to the big flat above the high earth bank. But the spruce trees were too thick for an outlook, and he threaded his way across the flat, and up the first steep slopes of the mountain at the back. Here, flowing in from the east at right angles, he could see the Klondike, and, bending grandly from the south, the Yukon. To the left, and downstream, toward Moosehide Mountain, the huge splash of white, from which it took its name, showing clearly in the starlight. Lieutenant Schwatka had given it its name, but he, daylight, had first seen it long before that intrepid explorer had crossed the Chilkoot and rafted down the Yukon. But the mountain received only passing notice. Daylight's interest was centered in the big flat itself, with deep water all along its edge for steamboat landings. A sure enough likely town site, he muttered. For a camp of 40,000 men. All that's needed is the gold strike. He meditated for a space. $10 to the panel do it, and it'd be the all-fearedest stampede Alaska ever seen. And if it don't come here, it'll come somewhere hereabouts. It's a sure good idea to keep an eye out for town sites all the way up. He stood a while longer, gazing out over the lonely flat, and visioning with constructive imagination the scene, if the stampede did come. In fancy, he placed the sawmills, the big trading stores, the saloons, and dance halls, and the long streets of miners' cabins. And along those streets he saw thousands of men passing up and down, while before the stores were the heavy freighting sleds, with long strings of dogs attached. Also he saw the heavy freighters pulling down the main street and heading up the frozen Klondike toward the imagined somewhere, where the diggings must be located. He laughed and shook the vision from his eyes, descended to the level, and crossed the flat to camp. 5 minutes after he had rolled up in his robe, he opened his eyes and sat up, amazed that he was not already asleep. He glanced at the Indian sleeping beside him, at the embers of the dying fire, at the five dogs beyond, with their wolf's brushes curled over their noses, and at the four snowshoes standing upright in the snow. It's sure hell the way that hunch works on me, he murmured. His mind reverted to the poker game. Our kings. He grinned reminiscently. Hat was a hunch. He lay down again, pulled the edge of the robe around his neck and over his ear flaps, closed his eyes, and this time fell asleep. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.